Here we are once again.
And we're back.
Deep Thinking, the one, the only, possibly the best podcast in the universe. There are others. You can listen to them, but we like ours the best.
Whatever excuse you
mumbles
got, love fucking more.
Over there. Michael Gugis, what are you eating?
I am eating Hickory Farms.
He's eating Hickory Farms. Oh, Michael, yeah. Why are you eating Hickory Farms?
Because it's here.
Because it's here.
I'm like a baleen whale.
And where,
it was in front of me.
Where is the Hickory Farms? It's here with
right.
Ed Sorbo
right,
of
right.
Lindemann Engineering.
Right, where's
at show number 46.
Right.
Of Deep Thinking. And the note that came on the box of this Hickory Farms.
Oh, this one came with the note?
Yep.
Awesome.
It says, Ed and Michael. You'll note that it had Ed before Michael.
Well, I have my actual name, not Mike.
No, Michael, yes.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you for the world's greatest road racing podcast, Old Racer. So the question for you is, how long does it take you to figure out
it's
who Old
be
Racer
Tony.
It's, gotta
it's
be
gotta
Tony.
It's
gotta
be Tony. Tony Sarah, the man, the myth, the legend, right?
74 years old when he became the world's oldest motorcycle class champion.
Right.
He's currently 76. Might as well be 300, right? Once you're over 75, you're just in the old category. So, thank you very much, Tony Sarah, for
thank
the Hickory
you.
Farms. We are enjoying it
hey, and
right
say
now.
I say hi to Gloria while you're there, man.
Hi, Gloria. Yes, Tony. Right? You want to know? People are like wondering, why does Michael think the guy's so great? Among all the other things, he brings his own doctor.
Right.
Who sidelines as his girlfriend
right.
to the racetrack.
How totally,
right?
how totally badass is
how
that?
How many of our listeners have a girlfriend doctor who comes
right?
to the right?
Have
nobody.
A girlfriend doctor at
only
all.
One, right?
At all. Because a girlfriend doctor looks at a racer and goes, oh no.
Yeah.
no, this is not working at all for me.
Well, Gloria is cool all in her own category, right?
Right.
You
right.
know? Not to mention the part where she's Tony's girlfriend.
Exactly. I mean, in her own orbit, she's amazing, let alone Tony. The two of them. Thanks, Tony. We appreciate it. So,
what are we going to talk about today?
We are going to talk for the second time about engine braking. Now,
is this going to be the actual
yes.
engine braking episode?
So, the reason we keep joking about this is because we actually made a show where we talked about engine braking.
It didn't come out so good.
We didn't like how
yeah.
it did. And I got a little off track on the engine braking part. And then there was
I love that
something else that we were talking about. It, you know, we decided to screw that one. And there was going to be a race the next weekend.
Right.
That we wanted to talk about the race. Because
right.
Yeah. So to jump right into engine braking, the customer, called me up and had a question or emailed me. And so I realized, man, you know what? This guy's come in at the end of engine braking. He's like seeing the engine braking we
right.
have now.
Mm-hmm.
How did we get to where we are? So Michael is putting Hickory Farm cheese on his McDonald's double cheeseburger.
Wait a minute, I missed the sausage. This is awesome. This might wind up being edible.
So if we go back and we get in the Wayback Machine.
Oh, do you know
what was the name of that?
It was
the
Wayback
Machine. The clue that we say Easter egg. That
Easter
was an Easter egg.
Right.
Back in the day when men were men and front tires were 19 inches.
Remind me to talk about the Wayback Machine and one of my favorite strippers' websites before this is over. go ahead.
So you had a big heavy engine, and when you close the throttle to slow down for the corner and you start braking, the engine is slowing down
uh-huh.
pretty quickly.
Right.
And if you then make a downshift and let the clutch out with the throttle closed, the engine's now going slower than the rear wheel speed.
Right.
And you have to rev the engine back up to match the RPM to the rear wheel speed to make a smooth downshift, just
mm-hmm.
like you do on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a blip, right? And you used to be able to watch superbike guys coming into corners, and if you were hearing the soundtrack, you saw their right arm
right.
make a big, you know, vavooma, and you hear the big blip. Wama! Wama! One for each downshift.
Right.
Okay? So that was blipping and downshifting, and we all had to learn to do that. And it took some practice and some skills. It was one of those things, though, where you could practice it on the street.
Now,
so,
why was it important to do that, though?
To match the engine speed to the road speed. Because if you didn't, it was effectively stomping on the rear brake.
Mm-hmm.
And the back end would start to lock up and slide and chatter and be all out of control. And these bikes were barely in control as it was. Right? And so you didn't need any of that stuff. Okay.
Right.
So the next evolutionary change in this is a slipper clutch, a back torque limiting clutch.
Right.
So a clutch that uses a mechanical device, a ramp, to the back torque is forcing the clutch apart, and it's opening the plates up the same as when you squeeze the clutch lever in. And so then the engine can just the engine doesn't rev more, but the bike rolls freer. Mm-hmm. And that makes it easier to match your blips.
There's no longer a direct connection between engine speed and rear wheel speed. There's some slip in there.
There's some slip
in
there.
Hence the name slipper clutch.
And
as a brief aside, the new Kawasaki 300, finally somebody used that idea in the other direction. When you get on the gas, the torque going into the clutch basket actually helps is designed and it's by
squeeze
the
it
FCC.
Together.
Yeah,
that's old school drag racing trick.
Yeah, but it was new on the Ninja 300.
So, and then what that does is allow them to get away with weaker clutch springs, which means because the Ninja, it's a sport bike, but it's also a commuter.
And
a problem for commuters, people with smaller hands, holding the clutch in at a traffic light is, you know, kind of a pain. So doing that clutch, they can have it. Another way that they did that was you used a diaphragm clutch. The GSXR 1100s had that. And that a diaphragm clutch, when you squeeze it too far, it folds the other way and becomes really easy to hold in. And then when you let it out.
Right at the very end of the travel.
Exactly. The problem for racing, though, was that as you start to let it out, it moves easily, and then it moves stronger. It changes in the middle, and it would make it very grabby.
Right.
So, okay, so we got slipper clutches. And by the way, if you have a slipper clutch, they require more maintenance than a regular clutch because they're slipping in both directions. So if you've got your GSXR, whatever, and it's got that plug on the middle of the clutch cover, and you've never taken that cover off and turned the engine over and adjusted your three little slipper adjuster things back to 1.5 turns, you're going to find out that they're really tight now and your slipper clutch
is not slipping.
Is doing something wrong, not to what it intended to. And to give you an idea how often you should be adjusting that, at the pro level, the teams do it every day.
Really?
Yeah. So Friday, end of the day practice, they adjust the clutch. And then, okay, you don't need to do it after every session. But and when you do it every day, it's a teeny tiny adjustment, if it's any at all.
Right.
But it changes the feel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had plenty of people who at the track are complaining to me about what I used to have people complaining to me about before slipper clutches. You know, back ends jumping around, and they think it's a suspension problem. And I ask them, have you ever adjusted your slipper clutch? And they look at me with a blank face. And we adjust their slipper clutch, and then it goes back to how it used to work.
The suspension problem goes away.
Exactly. Okay, so now we got a slipper clutch. Now the next evolution is we add an auto blipper.
Right.
So the engine goes vooma on its own. You don't have to do it.
Wait a minute. There's a step in between, and that's
You're right. Yeah. There's the fast idle thing.
Right.
So that what an old school trick was, we turned our idles up. Mm-hmm. Now you ride your bike on the street, idles at 1,200 RPM. You want the bike to stay cool when it's at a traffic light. You don't want to make more noise. You want to use less gas. You go to a racetrack, you turn it up to 2,000 by just turning the idle.
Okay.
And that makes the blips easier, and do that.
Because you're pretty much never going to be lower than 2,000 RPM anywhere on the track.
Yeah, exactly. And so you can have a computer system that was doing a version of that on its own, fast idle. They usually did it by letting bleed air in to raise the idle rather than mechanically moving the idle adjuster up and down. But with fly-by-wire systems, you can do it any number of ways you want.
And
we're not going to get into the details of how all the systems do it differently, but they bring the idle up to help you on the downshifts. And now they blip for you. Okay, so this leads to the question, why are the guys have the back end stepped out on the way into the corner? And one thing to understand is, they aren't always wanting to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the best example there is Marquez in Moto 2 was doing that a lot, and everybody thought that he was doing it on purpose, but it turns out that bike had an inadequate system, and he was doing it out of necessity, not because he wanted to.
Right.
Okay? Another thing to know is that when your back end is stepping out in from the front, okay, that means the back of the bike is traveling farther than the front of the bike.
Mm-hmm.
It means it's going faster than the front of the bike.
All right.
Well, then, how is it slowing you down?
It's not.
Exactly.
It's a problem. It's a real problem. Keep
now,
going. I'll
you
be
can
done with
use,
you chicken nuggets in a minute.
You can use
stepping
the back end out to steer the bike. And if you think of a flat track rider,
right.
Have the back end stepped out as they come into the corner, right? And then but the thing there is you've got to keep the back end out all the way into the corner until you're pointed in the direction. Then you turn the bars in. You steer the bike for a moment and start your drive. So when you see your buddy with the back end stepped out on the straightaway leading to the corner, then it gets back in line. Then he enters the corner. It's not doing anything.
Not helping with the steering
at all. It might look good
in
a picture, but it's not making you any faster. So the question that the guy had asked me had been, his assumption was that he wants it. Marquez wanted it stepped out. And then that leads to, oh, it's for this reason. But it turns out he didn't want it stepped out, and it leads to this other reason.
It was the best alternative he had, given the machine that he had.
Yeah.
You know?
So check it out. If you had to put your money on the guy who's going to win a race, a MotoGP race, mm-hmm. in the dry, who do you put your money on?
In the dry? Marquez.
Right now. Lorenzo.
No, I put my money on Marquez. Okay,
but we all know Lorenzo's the fastest guy right now.
He's amazing.
Okay? You ever see him out of line?
That's my point.
No.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
If you can do it, the fastest way around the track is to have more corner speed than everybody else.
Right.
Corner speed is the thing. Right?
Because that's the only area where you're not going as fast as the bike can possibly go.
Exactly.
On the straight, it's all about getting it to the stop, and then it's all about motor.
Yep.
Well, if all the bikes have roughly the same horsepower, then the difference you're going to make is in cornering speed. And there's a couple of things. If there's nobody in the way,
there's nobody in
Lorenzo's way right now, right? It's like nothing but air in front of him. Jesus, man, he's making
unbelievable.
Right?
He's so good at that, like, we don't even care that the race is a little bit boring.
You just marvel at it.
Well, part of the reason we don't care is the field is so deep right now that they just show you, oh, the battle for second and third is a little slow at the moment.
Exactly.
Well, check out this battle for sixth. Oh, my God.
Four guys who've been told they don't get on the podium, they don't eat, right? You know?
So you think we're done with engine braking?
No. I have plenty more to say about this, okay? First, there's a couple... you're right.
Halfway.
Fastest way around the track. Fastest way around the track. Both wheels in line at all time on the tarmac all the time. Now, there's a couple of old school.
And then Rossi rides out into the grass and gets the same drive. How does that happen?
Right. well, not exactly the same drive. And that's not grass. That's AstroTurf.
No. I'm thinking of tracks at the grass.
Mm.
So, if you... have a guy. If you are a guy with skills like Marquez,
mm-hmm.
and you can ride the bike that sideways, and you're compensated for something, all well and good.
Mm-hmm.
But I guarantee you, Marquez can get on anybody's normal bike
mm-hmm.
and ride it in line like Lorenzo and kick everybody's ass.
Oh yeah,
right.
That's him.
You gotta have those keep it in line mm-hmm. skills. And then you can add these out of control skills to compensate for some problem. So for mm-hmm. example. I'm riding a 250 Ninja. What do you think the best line through a given corner for me is going to be?
Completely
big
sideways.
Big sweeping line. Exactly. it's, welcome to Michael Gugis' world. But I practice the superbike squared off V lines. Why? Because I want to have them all in my toolbox.
Right.
You know, if there's three kids in front of me,
right
and they're mm-hmm. blocking the line I want, well, I'm just going to go surprise them, right? So it's not bad to use these different lines. It's not bad to have this skills and whatever. But... the goal should not be to be out of control.
The goal should not be to do something the way that it looks like somebody else is doing.
Exactly.
The goal is to look to do it the way that's fastest for what your skill set is.
Richard Bach.
Who's that?
The guy who wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Well, I know, but why are we talking about him?
He had a short story that had an idea for how to make the best pilots, because that was his thing on the side, was being a pilot.
Right.
Okay? And his idea was that you would build and fly... a replica of the earliest gliders that the Greeks made way back in the day.
Okay.
And you would work your
strap
way up.
A couple of wax wings to your
that
back.
Kind of
okay.
Stuff, right? And you would work your way up to a glider, a modern glider, and then a small light plane with an engine, and you'd learn all of those skills all the way up to whatever you wanted to fly. Mm-hmm. And I'm of that school. Learn to ride the bike, learn to blip the throttle, learn to do all the stuff. And then if you got some cool technology that makes it faster, better, stronger, great. But if you only know how to ride the bike where it blips for you, then you're going to be one of those guys. I see it almost every weekend. Oh, how come you didn't finish the race? My auto shifter stopped working. Really? You can't freaking upshift without an auto shifter?
Right?
Come on.
Exactly. You know, you have to be able to learn how to do multiple things, or one guy on the line will ruin it for you. There's something, you know, this is an old myth, and it's kind of perpetuated by some old school journalist who still remember, and I remember Kenny Roberts talking about this. He was the guy who said that the Americans from the dirt tracks, back in the time when the Americans dominated 500cc GP racing, he was the guy that said the dirt track skills were applicable. But this is why, and this is what's really interesting to me about this, okay? You've got bikes that have a light switch power band,
Okay, you have to, the 500s.
Yep.
Okay, so you've got to be in the power band or you're not going anywhere. So that's minimum requirement number one. You've got to be riding this bike where it's making so much horsepower that it's going to try to spin the rear wheel. Number two, the tires suck. And number three, and this is what's really different about then and now, the tires deteriorated and dramatically over the course of a race.
And for the whole time.
Yeah.
Right? They got worse and worse. Nowadays, they talk about, well, they're going to go off a little bit,
got shittier and shittier.
And then they go their fastest lap on the last lap.
Right. Well, what he said was what you learned to do and what the American riders, the U.S. riders had learned to do, was they'd learn to get it sideways early, and that way you always, that was your riding style. No matter, now it's not a matter of is the bike sliding, it's just a question of the bike is sliding, and you're always manipulating with the throttle, and you do that for 20 or 30 laps, and overall you wind up with the faster race time than going as fast as you can in a straight line at the beginning. Then when the tires go off, you've got to slow down.
I agree 100%, but I would refine the word sliding or spinning and say drifting. Because, well, it's a fine detail, but if you go to your average track day and you tell some guy you were spinning or you were sliding, they got this image in their head of this crazy sideways thing. And what these guys are doing, and again, you can watch it on MotoGP, is it's just drifting. I think that is a word. Every time I use the term drifting to people, they seem to go, okay, my wheels are totally in line. The next step up is drifting. Then they're sliding. Then, you know, then they're sideways, right?
Okay.
And so what I'm trying to say is it's more subtle. Refined. It's more subtle.
More subtle.
Than just
now,
it's all sideways. But you got a strong point. It's that you got it going a little bit early. It might not even be enough that people can see. It's just a little bit. And what that does, it takes the sharp edge off.
Right.
When it does snap out on you.
Because it's already sideways a little bit.
The other big thing about that is that those guys were comfortable with it, that it could happen.
Right. Because they were doing it deliberately.
Well, what I mean is that if you're riding a bike and you're scared if it slides, is different than if you're like, well, if it does slide, I know what I'm going to do.
Or it's already sliding. It's sliding a little more.
Exactly.
You know? Dunlop actually said, I think it was during the 90s. I'm almost sure it was Dunlop, okay? But I remember them talking about the superbike tires they were making. This is when superbikes started making real power, and you ally that to a twin spar frame where you can kind of control it. And they said that the tire actually made maximum edge grip at 105% of engine speed. So with just a little bit of slip, a little extra heat, got you a little bit more drive grip out. So you were doing that deliberately back then. Okay. The other thing I was going to say about engine braking is that it is now much more sophisticated. It is now one of the key components, if not the key component, of electronic engine management. It's one of the goals, is to manage that rear wheel. And it is carefully coordinated and, I can't think of a better word, so Mr. Professor over here, right? But it is carefully integrated. With the rear suspension travel. If you watch the guys on a World Superbike now, okay, going into a corner, you can watch the slow-mo stuff, and it's amazing. The rear wheel is absolutely on the ground, absolutely tracking. They're braking as hard as they can, okay? They've got the suspension set up so the rear wheel doesn't come off the ground, because you want the rear wheel to keep spinning. You don't want the rear wheel
keep
off the
rolling.
Ground. I'm sorry?
Rolling.
Yeah, you want it to keep rolling.
Not spinning.
Because you don't want the bike to start pivoting around the steering head bearing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the rear wheel is in contact with the ground and it's rolling at bike speed, the second you crack the throttle open, you now have full control.
You know, I wonder if that is something to do with why the Ducatis go ba-ba when the guy gets on the gas, whereas the Yamahas and the Hondas go boo. So the problem isn't that it's getting on the gas, because what you're describing is that they've got all those bugs worked out.
Right.
The problem is something that they're having going on the slowing down part is not completely done. And when they go to get on the gas, the problem is you can hear the problem with the baba and, you know.
Right. Because the problem's not actually acceleration.
The problem's some leftover from the slowing down. That makes good sense, because clearly they would have put their energy first into controlling the roll-on.
Right.
Oh, part of the thing about engine braking was when do the riders use the rear brake and what are they using it for? They're using it as they drive out of the corner to control the wheel spin. It was the early version of traction control.
Exactly.
You drug the rear brake.
And that's why you
and
had
the only the only reason for the thumb initially was because Mick couldn't move his foot. He was doing it with his foot.
Right. Let's, for you younger listeners.
Is there anybody that young in the world?
Yes. I know, it's disturbing.
I guess people get born every day.
I teach them all the time. They're my oh my God, they just look like kids now. Oh my God. Right? For those of you who don't remember, Mick Doohan.
Dude, the people running for president are starting to look young to me,
it's
right?
It's depressing, man. I go to the doctor now and they come walking in and I'm like, oh, isn't that cute? You took your daddy's lab coat. Can you please go find your dad? And they're like, I'm the doctor. I'm like, oh shit. Right? Mick Doohan broke his leg at Aston really badly, this close to it being amputated, had an extensive surgical procedure where his legs were split open, sewn together as one to keep the circulation flowing in the legs.
They had to sew his left leg to his right leg so the right leg could get blood circulation.
Right.
So, that's some dedicated shit.
Yeah.
So then when he comes back, he doesn't have range of motion.
Right.
And so he uses a thumb brake. Right. So he's doing the same thing. And then, you know, people have figured out that, you know what? I'm more dexterous, especially in right turns, mm-hmm. with my left thumb. So that's what they're using it for. They have a camera on Devioso's bike.
Right.
Is that how I say his name?
Devioso.
That shows him using the thumb brake coming out of corners. It's actually a great view of it.
Well, Marquez also said that he has one on his bike, but he only uses it on left-hand corners because he carries such crazy lean angles. He can no longer get his foot. Which one's on the brake? Yeah, the brake's on the left.
Yeah, so he's saying he's using his
right foot in left
turns, and he uses the thumb brake in right turns.
Uh-huh.
Whatever.
Yeah. The last thing that I wanted to say about it is I know it sounds really dumb, you know, and it sounds like you want to try to brake at 102% of the force that's needed to get the rear wheel off the ground, because that way you know you've got all the braking power.
You want to keep the rear wheel down so you can steer.
Absolutely. Marquez and Honda, they say that their big problem this year is the rear wheel is unstable going into corners because they didn't get the engine braking right and they can't fix the engine internals because of the development
It seems
phase.
The consensus is not enough flywheel weight.
Yeah, and that's...
Not enough engine inertia.
Right, and the computer can only do so much to keep the wheel spinning at the right speed.
Right, so when your engine doesn't have enough mass in the crankshaft, mm-hmm. then it speeds up and slows down too quickly.
Uh-huh.
Now, understand, this crank, the mass they're aiming for is still significantly less than the mass in your stock street bike.
Right.
We're still talking about a really light thing.
Fine.
They went a little, and that's one of those things, it's one of those things where a little bit too little is now way too much too little. There's a freaking line. It's not a zone.
But it's
and they missed the mark.
Yeah, and you don't have to be by much to have a disastrous effect.
But if you
have
a street bike, and you take the charging system off the end of the crank, that's just all good. That's a lot of weight you can take off.
I am going to argue with you if you're a club racer. You know why?
Why?
Because now your wife has to help you push start the goddamn bike.
Once the bike is going, you can get those.
I had one of those.
Time for the 2-minute board.
I'll finish with this. Okay. I had one of those. I had a bike that I had to push start.
I have one.
I
side saddled it when I started.
I couldn't wait to get the starter back on that thing. So probably the reason I'm
still
alive.
So this stuff on our list is going to have to wait till the next show.
Do we have a 2-minute board? I want to talk about the comments that I have read from Rossi's fans after the Aragon race.
So wait a minute. Which one was Aragon?
Just happened.
Rossi got spanked by Lorenzo. And he had an awesome battle with Pedroza. Okay, go.
Okay, ready?
Yep.
Here's the gist of their comments. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Great. Now Danny chooses to grow a sack.
It's Danny's fault, is it?
Yeah, exactly. You know, because these are Rossi fans. You know, he walks on water and all of that. And anything that, you know, goes wrong, it's everybody else's fault. And it just reminds me. And again, I'll say his name. I am so upset with Dean Adams for the years and years and years of abuse he has heaped on Danny Pedrosa for one rookie mistake that he made that didn't wind up costing Nicky a championship. And it has led to a whole generation of American road racing fans who don't respect the guy and have no respect for his accomplishments. I read somewhere...
Anybody who doesn't respect one of the four fastest humans in the world, it's just silly.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. I've read that Danny Pedrosa in his career has broken 106 bones. 106.
Yeah, that's more than me.
Okay. So, I would like to tell ask anybody who says, oh, now Danny's grown a sack, let's take you out back. We'll use a dead blow hammer because we're humanitarian. We'll break 106 of your bones. Right.
Well, to be fair, Danny didn't do them all at once.
Right. He probably broke the same one multiple times.
Well, hey, by the way, who was it that picked Danny Pedrosa to win the championship this year?
You.
I did.
Yes.
I turned out to be wrong on that part, but I didn't turn out to be wrong about the guy's speed.
Oh, no, no.
Just unfortunate with the wrist injury and all. But check it out. Next year, buddy. Danny Pedrosa for the championship.
I don't know.
You heard it here first.
I think.
On Deep Thinking, I'm Ed Sorbo.
He's Ed Sorbo. Wait, I'm Michael Gugis.
Aloha.